Production. Recorded live.
Hi, this is Will and Doug today on the 14th of February, 2012. This is 42 Minutes where we discuss the answer to life, the universe, and everything. We actually had a last-minute cancellation by our scheduled guest for tonight. That's why we're doing it tonight, is because he could only talk to us tonight. But because of health issues, Ken Thomas cannot be with us. He said that he is glad to reschedule, though, so I'm very anticipant. But because of all of the research that we've been doing to get ourselves ready for Ken Thomas, like, we were just kind of conversating about him right before we started recording. You know, I don't know if you remember. I mean, did you go back and did you read, Doug, the old Katsa Brave New World Order blog?
Have I, since we talked to them last week?
No, not since then. I'm just saying, like, because you found Katsa after he had been running, or probably he was off of that blog by the time you found Think, am I right? So I'm asking if you went back and you read some of his older posts.
I think at some point in time, I went back to the beginning of Jake's blog and read, or I read everything that he had written in order.
Right, me too. So he had the same effect on you as he did me then, for sure.
Yeah. Well, because it seemed like there was, he had a thread that was definitely worth following. So even though, no matter where I jumped on was DuckTales, I picked up, I think a lot of people, the DuckTales really sold it. But then after that, I went back to the beginning of where he started pretty much and just started reading everything he had ever written.
Well, see, do you remember when he was talking about Casino Royale and Lachief? There's a character in Casino Royale named Lachief who is based it off of Aleister Crowley. Because Lachief is French for the number. And the number, of course, would be 666. See, I was just thinking about this because Ian Fleming, who worked for the British Secret Service, you know, was part of a long line that started with these Englishmen, Secret Service men who were, like, wrapped in esoteric weirdness. Aleister Crowley, there's been many books put out about Aleister Crowley being involved in British intelligence, and, of course, what's his name, John Dee? Is that his name? Is that correct?
John. Yeah, John Dee.
Yeah, an alchemist?
Yeah, well, he was basically British intelligence, and he signed all of his papers 007, which is where Ian Fleming is supposedly had gotten...
Okay, take us back to the beginning. Why are we talking about James Bond?
Well, there's this man by the name of Bruce Roberts. Okay, or supposedly that's what his name was. And
what is your interest in this? Is this...
Well, around 1976, I think that's when he died, actually, but right before then, he put out these things. I don't know the entire history. That's why I want to talk to Mr. Thomas about this. But he wrote this alternate history of what happened in the United States from, like, 1932 to 1975, basically outlining how there was this whole underground mafia who were controlling everything from kidnapping Howard Hughes to killing JFK. And he said in these Gemstone files that the secrets of all of this stuff was hidden within the chapters of Ian Fleming's James Bond.
Okay.
So there's like this alternate reality that...
So do you think Ken Thomas talks about episodes of TV shows, is this a way for people who actually know what's going on to communicate with the rest of the population?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on.
Secret dealing?
There's a couple of things going on. Ken Thomas is actually kind of interested in weird little synchronicities that happened in the 60s that involved these themes that probably weren't so much intentional. But,
okay,
but is
Ian Fleming intentional? Is he spelling out?
Well, there's weird shit. like the name main character we were talking about before we started recording was named Blofeld. His name is Ernst Stavro Blofeld, who is said to be based off of Aristotle Onassis. Like the character description is a lot like Aristotle. Do you know who Aristotle Onassis is?
Sure. Yeah, he married Jackie O, right? After her husband
was
assassinated.
He's a Greek like shipping man, according to the real. I mean, if you look at him, he looks like fucking Dr. Evil. It's fucking crazy.
Will, wasn't Onassis? There's also some interesting history to Onassis, where he was something like he was saved. There was like some sort of attack on the Greek village that he lived in as a boy, and he was like the only one saved. That some shipping master decided to save him from this disaster.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
Do we have a caller? Who is this caller?
Talking to me, Dev?
You know who this is. This is Alan. Alan's on here with us. Alan Avidessa, the editor
That's
of the
great.
Book. I guess he finished his stir fry.
Listen,
hold on. So basically this Gemstone Files pins out that controlled this cabal. Like, he controlled this, he basically took control of the mafia, and he was trying to take control of the United States government. And I'll tell you why all of this makes a lot of sense to me.
Howard Hughes.
Yeah, well, Howard Hughes was known, like, there is so much mystery wrapped around Howard Hughes. For one thing, like, his will has always been in dispute. There's been so many accusations of impersonators for Howard Hughes and how he had to deconstruct his company. He was, like, one of the first, you know, he's basically Tony Stark's character, Iron Man. He was amassing a shitload of money by becoming a military, like, contractor, okay? So he's a war profiteer, and he had started buying politicians. This is pretty known stuff. I mean, this even appears in Leonardo DiCaprio's movie Aviator, made by Scorsese. And he was going out and bribing politicians. Well, it backfired on him, and it said through these Gemstone files that was, you know, Onassis's main adversary was Howard Hughes, so he kidnapped Howard Hughes and put in an impersonator. So because Howard Hughes had Nixon in his pocket, Howard Hughes had paid off Nixon. And the reason this makes sense is because you don't really even have to figure out who killed Kennedy. All you have to look at is what happened fucking after Kennedy. But George Bush was leader of the CIA in the 70s, and all of a sudden he's a freaking vice president. The Central Intelligence Agency put a fucking plant in the White House. I mean, it makes sense. They couldn't control Kennedy, so up underneath this alternate reality, other than the mainstream, you kill Kennedy and you instate a CIA agent. It's like something out of a Bond book. It makes complete sense.
And if you're just joining us, this is 42 Minutes. I'm Doug, and we have Will on the line, and Alan Avidessa Green is also joining us. And we're talking, we had a late-minute guest cancellation, and we're talking JFK and conspiracy a little bit.
Okay, so, I mean,
I wonder about, conspiracy, what you've just done is kind of proven my example where when you're talking about conspiracy, you're looking at a spider web, but you don't have any perspectives, and so you have to kind of spin around from connection to connection. You spin around from connection to connection, and you end up sounding a little crazy. But I wonder if when you pull back, if you're able to, and so you said King Thomas wrote about Project Octopus, which was more of a grander perspective of what was actually happening, these different tentacles of the conspiracy and what they were trying to accomplish.
Right. Let's look at this from the Sync point of view. The reason I like Sync is because I trust it more. You can look at stuff and debate. Like I said, I mean, who really cares who shot Kennedy? All you have to look at is what happened afterwards. Do you know what I mean? Like, who benefited from Kennedy dying? You don't have to figure out who pulled the initial trigger. I mean, all of that's just...
But there's another point of view to this, too, though. And so we'll bring you, Alan, in on this. Jason wanted to ask Ken Thomas why the JFK assassination looks so similar to the Osiris myth. You know, so, like, it enacts the monomyth so well, the king kill. And so Alan knows a bit about this guy who wrote King Kill 33. Do you know anything about that, Will?
King Kill 33 is what you just said?
James Shelby Downward wrote something called, and he's also a conspiracy theorist. And I've actually bumped into his stuff before, but it was called King Kill 33, Masonic Symbolism in the Assassination of JFK.
Oh, yeah, I think I've heard some of this guy talk about it. He says that it was all set up to be a symbolic ritual of the killing of the king, the young king. Is that sort of correct?
I don't know. Alan, can you add to that, or did you step away?
No, I'm here. Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, from what I understand, James Shelby Downer maintains that there is, you know, some of these strange synchronicities themselves might have been, you know, are planned or orchestrated. And it's like that common thing that we find when, you know, guys like us doing sync work, and then you notice like a vigilant citizen or some of these guys who's like, they come across, they're noticing the same connections, but one person's going to see it as an orchestrated connection. Oh, this is obviously planted, proof of a ritual or some sort of conspiracy, and then other people are going to come at it and say synchronicity. I think I understand what Will's saying is there is undoubtedly a conspiracy here. I mean, a man was fucking shot. You know, it was a political coup. You don't really have to stretch your imagination here to understand there was a legitimate conspiracy. The part that starts getting a little gray area is, where does this become ritual? So James Shelby Downer points out a lot of this Masonic symbolism that comes down to things like the addresses, the names,
right,
the latitudes, you know, showing
what
on and on.
Do it. That's more sinkhead shit, in my opinion, not proof of a conspiracy. And that's
correct.
Where I lie at all of this.
Okay, so you guys were wondering about my conspiracy stuff. And so...
Yeah, because it seems like it's hard for you to get on, and it's not necessarily that I want to convince you of any conspiracy, but I just want you, I like being in my place, my stance is like, I like being in a place where you're looking at shit objectively, where you're seeing what makes sense, but not really committing on anything.
Right.
But it seems like you kind of want to fight when it gets into that headspace.
Me?
Why? Because it makes you sound crazy? Is that what you think? I mean, is that how you feel?
No. So, like, 9/11 was definitely my initiation, right? Back in the mid-90s, early 90s, I don't know. No, 90s, late 90s, there we go. I listened to Art Bell, and it was UFOs and X-Files, and it's fun, right? But it's just, it's more of a novelty than anything. But it was enough of a planting of it, you know, that seed of doubt, so that later, years later, after 9/11 happened, and then I'm tuned into Art Bell again later, and I hear people questioning the story on TV, and I'm like, oh, how dare they? How dare they question this? But it was enough for me to wonder, and then later, I think it was 3 years later, or no, 2005, it was right around the time V for Vendetta came around. So about that same time, I started asking the same, so I was like in perfect sync with the movie. So when that movie came out and began asking questions of the Bush regime and the 9/11 tragedy, and then the war that we had just started, or no, maybe we'd been in for a couple years, 3 years maybe. Yeah, so it was like 2005, 2006. It was so heavy because then all of a sudden you realize how scary and fearful and awful the world could be, right? So there's all these bad guys running around, and so I'm literally thinking, I know too much. They're going to come for me. I know too much. You know, like the idea. I remember listening to PJ Harvey and vacuuming one day, and it just hit me so hard. The idea just that they made it happen. They made it happen. That was in my head. I'm thinking they made it happen. They made it. And I don't. But what happened is I went down that rabbit hole, you know, trying to figure out who was casting these wicked, evil shadows. And I ended up in a place where I realized I could never know, and quite possibly it was metaphysical. Or, you know, like, so the grand orchestrator is bigger than all of us. You know, everyone's vying for
a piece of... Harvey vacuuming, man. You cannot make that shit up. All right, now look, though, there's like, in my opinion, what clinched it for me when I knew about all this gemstone stuff was how it reverberated in what I was watching, which was Leonardo DiCaprio. You have Leonardo DiCaprio as Howard Hughes in The Aviator. And like I said, how he's kind of the model for Iron Man. Well, in the movie, man, in The Iron Mask, he's switched with an impersonator. In James Bond, Diamonds Are Forever, James Bond follows this trail all the way from Sierra Leone in this diamond smuggling business to Area 51 to find a gentleman whose name is WW. It's basically it's a stand-in for Hugh Hefner. He's been kidnapped and an impersonator put in his place, and James Bond finds him on an oil rig. It mimics what happens in the gym files as far as what Howard Hughes, or what happened to Howard Hughes. Well, see, Leonardo DiCaprio's
Who wrote the gym files?
Huh?
Who wrote the gym files? What is the...
serious individual by the name... I just said it. It's by, his name was Richard... I want to say... Bruce Roberts. That's what his name is.
Oh, okay. Can I interject here? I mean,
it's like 1,000 pages long. But hold on, no, I'm not done yet. See, you have Leonardo DiCaprio. he is James Bond. He impersonates James Bond in Catch Me If You Can, and he's being followed by the Men in Black. See, it's weird. Like, I couldn't say that to Ken Thomas without him rolling his eyes, of course. But at the same time, it's there. It's like this metaphysical reverberation of a possible alternate reality. And that's why I like Sync, is because it's more proof of, like, you can't hide anything from the collective consciousness. I mean, what do you guys think about that idea?
Well, that's what I wanted to throw in here. I mean, basically, as I said before, I think we exist in a headspace where we understand that there are actual conspiracies, and yet every action seems to be a reverberation of something bigger, these archetypes, as, you know, Doug would say, the monomyth, all these different things of on that bigger collective consciousness scale. And even, you know, a little thing, like you dropped in Area 51. You know, for me, the 51, whenever you see 317 or 51, which is 3 times 17, these are little numerical clues, but it seems to be evidence of that we're resonating with Osiris, the original King Kill. Osiris is, in my opinion, is the original King Kill. He was killed on 317, on March 17th. And you see that within the JFK mass, you know, the JFK killing within 9/11, in the Osama bin Laden killing, within, you know, Jesus and Caesar, you know, in the Name Your King Kill, it seems to have this similar, you know, resonating effect. And I think what a lot of the think heads would then do is figure out how to apply this. You know, what does this mean on a larger fractal scale? For it doesn't mean that someone wasn't killed. You know, 9/11, those buildings fell down in a 3D, you know, existence that you and I recognize. Two giant fucking buildings fell down. JFK, he had his head blown off. but ultimately, what is the, you know, I think the think heads, what we're trying to do is bring this to like a, how does this resonate with all these other things? And I studied the Osama bin Laden killing, and I find that it is incredibly entwined with this, and we must realize that, you know, Osama is the king. Osama in Japanese means king. So when he was killed, I see that he is very much, you look at all the symbolism around that event, whether or not he was, and again, you know, when we get into the conspiracy realm, was he actually killed last year, or had he been dead for years, like Benazir Bhutto had suggested, and many others, he'd been reported dead many times. The, like, quote-unquote 3D truth of when did this man die almost gets, you know, it's almost become secondary to the question of how does it resonate with all these other events throughout history in our own lives.
Okay. It's Valentine's Day. Why are we talking about this?
Because James Bond is a lover.
No. Right, James Bond is a lover.
Well, this it also has to do with the moon, and it has to do with Kubrick, and it has to do with all kinds of other madness.
This is episode 18. This is the moon card.
Right. And which is a symbol of love, in a way.
It is, but it's also not. There's a dark side to that, too, that the moon is, according to one of the books I read, that when an eclipse happens, it's the moon that comes between you and your symbol of your true self. So the moon is what you have to pass through your reflection. You know, the idea the moon is a mirror of the sun, that you actually have to pass through the mirror to make it out of the underworld. And so maybe it all fits like perfectly together that it's Valentine's Day. It's our moon card, and we're talking about JFK, like conspiracy, passing through somehow the shadow. I don't know. Help me out.
Well, how about I'll throw you a sinkier thing here, because I disagree with a lot of the interpretations put on the moon. I rather like the moon. But let's give you something. Will brought this up, this idea that, you know, Ian Fleming had somehow encoded a lot of the JFK story or the secret history into his James Bond stories. What about all the people who think that there is Stanley Kubrick encoded into his movies?
Right.
A moon landing. So if you want to do moon, let's even connect this moon landing, which of course is deeply tied to JFK.
Oh, yeah, 1969.
Yeah, even what James Sheldon Downard's King Kill 33 ties in the, you know, this moon launch with the JFK assassination.
Right, because it is. I mean, that's the Gemstone Files kind of all. Well, like I said, you guys, I probably need to get James Bond, Diamonds Are Forever, the movie, because that's what happens. James Bond tries to get out of this. He finds the bottom of the pipeline where they're smuggling these diamonds, and he runs off through this, the bad guy's lair, and he comes upon a German scientist filming the, fake moon landings. It's in Nevada because he goes to Vegas. So, I mean, automatically you know it's Area 51. When James Bond hops in this lunar module and he rides off through the wall and all the troops are firing bullets after him as he, you know, escapes into the desert. It's hinting. I mean, it puts James Bond right there. And who is chasing Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can but the man in black, Tom Hanks, who is the pilot of Apollo 13 that never made it to the moon? And you can go with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, where he has the little kid wearing the Apollo sweatshirt, and how a bunch of people have already hinted that he's hidden a bunch of information. So the story goes that he made the movie, like Dr. Strangelove, that deals with German scientists. They liked his work so much, they were like, if anybody can fake a moon landing, this guy can. Gave him the ability and the budget to make whatever movie he makes, and he makes 2001 and the moon landing at the same time.
Something that's always confused me about the Kubrick, you know, as the exposing the conspiracy, there's something in Dr. Strangelove that never really sat well with me, was the idea that he makes the conspiracy theorist out to be the crazy guy. You know, it's like the guy who's saying, fluoride, they're trying to kill us with, you know, they're trying to kill us with fluoride. Your, what is it, like our special fluids, our sacred bodily fluids. But, you know, modern-day conspiracy still maintains this idea that we're being poisoned with fluoride in this sort of same exact plot that Kubrick makes fun of in Dr. Strangelove.
Right. Right. Well, these people get inspired and they put stuff out there that, like, heady individuals like us, or what Steve Wilner called it, heady, what they key in on. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's like, I don't know. Like people, it's easy once you see Sink to think, oh, holy shit, all of this is on purpose. You know what I mean? Like,
but it is on purpose. It's just, so that's why the conspiracy doesn't mean anything to me. Because it's not, it's like quantum physics. Everything's connected. We've said this so many times. And so, of course, it's all connected.
But it's fun. It's fun as shit.
It is. And so it's like, why is it that the best books, you know, like it's a mystery, right? You need to get all the Harry Potter books, or everyone is just a, you know, a mystery book that they've got to solve, and then you, the reader, get to experience, you know? That's why you
How
care.
How are we on time, Doug? How are we on time?
We have, it's 26 minutes past. It's 42 minutes. I'm speaking with Will, and I have Alan Abadesa on the line.
And Alan has a question for you, Doug. So,
Alan?
Yeah, we've gotten to the point where we see that all things are interconnected. Sink shows us this, and we're comfortable with this sort of very deep layer of understanding where we see how things are all interconnected. But even though Sink is, we're grouping things together without cause and effect very often, right? This is the idea of synchronicities. It does not have to be lumped together by cause and effect. However, that doesn't mean that cause and effect stops, you know, being a real phenomenon. We're looking at something that's beyond cause and effect. And yet, if I make a plan to, you know, travel to Idaho and shoot you as you drive down the street, that will definitely affect you. And if someone makes a plan to shoot JFK, that's, you know, pull the trigger, cause and effect. However, there are still all the synchronicities around it. Like, this is, I don't understand why some, I do understand why someone says, hey, synchronicity shows us that what's much, much, much more important is the interconnected nature of everything. What I don't quite grasp is that somehow, some of this conspiracy stuff stops being real, unless we are saying that all of reality is not real.
I'm not saying that none of this. Okay. See, I don't even know what to do with that, because so, like, that's the thing. Like, in the movie JFK, Joe Pesci, you know, said the shooter doesn't even know who killed him, right? You know, It's an octopus. It's the spaghetti monster that we consumed, our God, the spaghetti monster at the sink cabin, might be the grand conspirator.
Yes, yes.
Left field, I have no idea what the fuck a spaghetti monster is.
The flying spaghetti monster.
You guys are saying, like, oh.
Will, you've never heard of the flying spaghetti monster?
What?
Really? You've never heard of flying spaghetti monster?
It's like this icon that, like, people, I think there was like an atheist group wanted to sort of imply, hey, you know, we're going to just come up with this, like, really absurd God that we're going to say we believe in. It was used to, like, challenge different religious beliefs, laws, and whatever. And they called it the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. So,
there really is a Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster? I thought we were the first.
No, there's a group. It just gained in popularity. I'm sure they don't actually have a church, but they have, it has a very large following of people who associate with it. usually meant as I think people are associating with it as a sort of statement against religious dogma or even a lot of theology. But when we were eating at the sink cabin, we were talking about the Eucharist, and we're all sitting there eating spaghetti. And then I realized, oh my God, this is the Eucharist. We're eating spaghetti. Is our fine spaghetti monster God? So then, you know, I said, did we just kill our God, or is this the Eucharist? And Jason believed it was the Eucharist. We were having our Last Supper. I don't know. Just this is the type of thing where, certainly, on a cause and effect level, Doug, you were the one who made the spaghetti. You boiled water, put in spaghetti, and put sauce on it, and we all ate it. That's cause and effect. Where the sink comes in is that it ties in with the conversation we were having and, you know, all our explorations into metaphysics. So it's like I can see how both are true, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Right. And I'm not saying...
Sink forces you, though. Sink forces you into considering the reasons. And then that's why I like it, because you go over the top. I learned that real quick. After a while, you're sinking with everything. I mean, any sinkhead who knows he's been to the brink is the sinkhead who's, you know, watching a movie on VLC, and it takes 4 hours because he's taking a freaking still every 3 seconds. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, to a point, you got to sit there and you're like, okay, really? Do I have to take, you know, a friggin'... It's just basically I spliced the whole movie into single frames and said everything sinks. And then you start picking out what is valuable to you. It's like you overindulge in making your...
That's the important question to me. Why is it valuable to you?
Right. After a while, it doesn't become valuable to you anymore. All that becomes valuable to me after a while is what you can do to other people. And then that deals with the presentation of actually setting up the sink, thinking about what the effect is on other people. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to make people get goosebumps. And you're trying to open up and, like, disinhibit them and release these ideas and how could this be. It's like... It's like shooting out UFOs to people.
I think I've come to maybe a conclusion. And maybe... So, week after week, Jason comes over and we watch something. Lately, it's been Twin Peaks. But within the various realms of different spiritual traditions, you have this idea that if you do the right thing, you can break free of the confines of the quote-unquote prison, right? So this is Philip K. Dick's Black Eye in Prison, which is more of the Gnostic thing, that life is kind of crappy, and that if you attain gnosis, you'll be able to transcend this life, and then you won't suffer anymore, say. Or the Christians kind of had their own tradition of, if you lead a good life, then when you die, you'll be able to go to heaven. You know, so it's a real similar thing. Part of me thinks that the architecture of the universe is such that it's the wheel of time, and so there's this, it seems like it goes around and around, and so we have the same horrible play playing out over and over again, and that's why we're able to now see these patterns. You know, like, so, yes. Everyone has their role to play on the stage, and we all play all the roles, but at the same time, there's these grand themes that happen over and over again, and there's nothing we can do about it. So we're going to see the king kill over and over and over again, or we're gonna be the king that's killed, and it's going to break our heart, or, you know what I mean? So it's like I'm wondering about if the play is about to start getting really nasty. So, like, we're going from comedy to tragedy.
No, stop. Stop.
The thing
I've learned from Sink is the interpretation. I mean, that's what the post that I just put up on the sinkhole is about. You know, these things that have happened through history, like Hitler and like
right,
just
but so, like, awful. World War One and then World War Two. You know, these are, like, super dark times. And then then things come back and everyone's happy, you know, and then the darkness returns.
It's about accepting what the history of man is. It's about realizing what we are and what we are and what we've been, what we're going to be, and that all of this is just little more than the evolution of man becoming what he is supposed to be. We have
think
the main point of
I don't know if I believe in anything other than flow. So there is flow and things flow, but that doesn't mean that there's any intention behind the flow. Things just happen and then they
You're thinking that the world is like just a random machine that somebody wound up and left there. No. Everything that man does is
now you're showing me your cards, Mr. Morgan. You're saying there is a grand architect and there is a purpose and
right.
There is a plan.
There is no them. Hitler was doing what he thought he should do.
What's that?
So was Oswald.
Right.
And they were part of the grand scheme. We needed them, in fact.
But no, see, I can't do that. So like you're saying, because of all the good that came out of the darkness, then it's okay.
And see, you know, this is also explored. I was already hinting down this road, but this was explored in Stephen King's new book, 11-22-63. I mean, towards the very end of it, he's got to go back and fix it all, because once he takes Oswald out of the equation, everything goes to shit. You know,
Stephen King, basically, you spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go into detail about what happens, but, you know, an alternate reality comes up. It's the whole butterfly effect, which was really weird, because right when I got to the end of that, then there was a whole big explosion about butterflies and insects and the sink community. It was like it was talking to me personally, because one thing leads to another. But after a while, I mean, what sink has taught me is that everything happens because it happens. I mean, there's no other real way that it can happen. It's like a story. Sooner or later, when you're writing a story, you know what the ending's going to be because it's the only thing that can fit.
Yeah, and I think there is something, I think there was something very powerful in there. You said the idea of that, you know, a Hitler or an Oswald, they do what they do because they think it's right. I mean, this is something as, you know, if our universe is a story that someone's writing, well, the best stories have characters that aren't just, you know, black and white, good and bad. They are a bunch of people who are complex and have their own motivations and their own set of morals and their own, you know, they're driven by their set and setting and so on. So that there are good guys, bad guys. You know, certainly for each of us, we can see that, you know, someone attacking me is a bad guy to me. And yet on that sort of zoomed out scale, he's just one more cog in this machine. I think the question that I think you both seem to be agreeing that there seems to be some sort of great machinery of the universe. The question is, what is that
machinery? Machinery diminishes the universe. Humans make machines. Right. It's
so you're still on the concept that there's a bad. You still separate humans from nature, Doug.
No. I hardly do not. I do not separate humans from nature. But that said, so like the idea of ecosystem, we've taken the idea of a system which we understand, and then put it on nature, which is way bigger than any system that we could conceive of in our own mind. So by calling the universe a machine, you've done the same thing. You've made it something you can put into your head and manipulate, but the universe is bigger than us. It is. It's like it's Big Daddy Sapien that we were talking about last week.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. You know, to a certain extent, we're anthropomorphizing everything, you know, by trying to simplify it into terms that make sense to us.
But we come across the idea that there's this micro and macro relationship. You know, the
right.
Fractal, the idea that it's all there at the smallest piece.
Correct. So I think the question, you know, I think we're all sort of saying the same thing, and it's it's interesting. We sort of hit on a weird little area of contention or something, but
would you say it's contention, though?
What's that?
Would you say it's contention?
Oh, I don't know. It just got more heated than I'm used to hearing 42 minutes be. I don't.
That's what's interesting. Usually, Will and I are trying to understand what the guest thinks, and right now he and I are trying to understand each other.
Right.
Well, that's what makes 42 minutes work. Is me and Doug are far different people. We are not the same at all.
Okay, let me tell you a story.
Right.
Last week.
Well, how much time do we got? How much time?
We have 2 minutes. Last week, I was in my jammies, and Will and I are always on Skype when we're doing this, so I can
tell him. Don't tell this. No. No. This does not need to be told.
What, Doug in his jammies? You guys?
I was in my jammies, and they slipped down as I was walking away to tell my kid something, and he saw my butt, and it totally broke him.
Well, when you say it like that, I was giving you a hard time because you're walking around your house with your pants down.
I just saw
it on Skype. And this is one hell of a way to end 42 minutes.
It's Valentine's Day, and we've arrived at...
and we're talking about full moon.
The moon card, it was my moon card.
You're totally an asshole. I totally mean that, Doug.
Totally.
Jesus. What does that have to do with anything? Why, did you just have to say that? I mean...
Well, you said it's totally different. And the idea of seeing a naked butt, it's shocking, but, you know, I can deal with it.
I think it would be... Whatever. I did not. That did not break me. I just asked for it not to happen again. That's all.
Okay, so we got 35 seconds.
We're going to try to get Ken Thomas on here again, but I appreciate Alan for filling in. Thank you, sir.
No problem. I love chatting with you guys anytime.
We're chatting with you too.
We're supposed to have Jim Sanders on, but Jim Sanders says he can't make it for Tuesday morning, but hopefully we can get him for just a quick 42 minutes, maybe over a cup of coffee. We'll see what we can do. But other than that, the sky's the limit. We have to start rescheduling for the next month.
Okay. Yeah, it's a surprise. Talk to you soon. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.